We are going to be working our way through the book, The Philosophy of Ernest Holmes, which is the second book in the series of Holmes papers. And I got really interested in the topic. It's a little more straightforward than maybe the first volume was. So, New Thought itself, as a religion, originated in the United States back in the 19th century. And since then, its influence has spread around much of the world. But when you really look at it, the influence, it began maybe centuries, millennia ago. And before I start talking about our history, I wanted you to think about all our early influences that led to the creation of New Thought. Do you remember learning about planting seeds in your foundations class? I kept thinking of that as I was reading through this chapter. And so here's a quote from the Science of Mind textbook. When the consciousness speaks, the law receives and executes. When a farmer plants a seed, he invokes the law. That which follows is done by the mechanical side of nature, which has no volition of its own. Involition is the cause, and evolution is the effect. So, when a practitioner thinks or gives a treatment or makes a prayer, he's dealing with involution, the first step of the creative order. That's what the Bible calls the word. That which follows is evolution, or the unfoldment of the word or concept into objective existence. So, hang on to that thought as I talk further. So, if you go back a few thousand years, we trace elements of Buddhism and Hinduism that are part of our teaching today. And that teaching has spread throughout Asia via the Silk Road. The central teaching that we inherited was the aim of that faith, what the aim of faith is to eliminate suffering. And many elements of New Thought can be traced to Pluto, who held that realm, that the realm of former ideas is more re real than that of matter. Again, going back a few centuries, in the 11th century, Saint Anselm, who became the Archbishop of Canterbury, wrote a description of God in his earliest book. This comes close to the Holmes definition. It says, God exists as the greatest good. Wholeness exists everywhere, is in everything, through everything, and always. In other words, God is all there is. Have you ever heard those words before? So in the 13th century, Meister Eckhart was excommunicated 200 years after his death. I don't know how that works, but anyhow, he was excommunicated for saying that God never had but one son and is forever begetting his only begotten, and he is begetting him in me now. And this mystical statement is like the first two steps of treatment. God is all there is, and I'm part of it. So during the 19th century, there was a very strong women's movement that kind of coincides with all of this. It wasn't mentioned in the chapter, but if you look at New Thought churches today, many of the congregations and ministry are led by women. So, for instance, in the 19th century, to give you an example of the emergence of women as leaders, Elizabeth Blackwell was the first degreed physician in this country. And she started studying medicine. And despite that, she got a lot of harassment from all the men in her classes at college. She showed them, though, and she graduated first in her class. And then my heroine is Harriet Tubman, who was an example of a very strong woman who had a huge influence on this country. She was a mystic, although that happened after an injury to her head, a conductor on the Underground Railroad, probably the most famous, and a spy for the Union Army. And she is such a great example of somebody who had a vision and marched with it. Now, these two women are examples of the energy that was growing in the 19th century. They weren't connected necessarily to New Thought, but they're still examples of courageous women who were leading the change in this country. And I might add, my aunt was one of the first PhDs in her country. And, she was born quite a while ago. And She's another example of women that decided, you know what, I'm going to move on. And she did. Now, often Phineas Quimby is cited as the starting force that created New Thought, and he was the earliest proponent of ideas on mental healing with a view that ultimately created the notion that in our minds, we create mental and spiritual healing in all the conditions in our lives. He later wrote that he had suffered from consumption or tuberculosis in his youth, a disease that back then had no cure. And so he began experimenting with his own ideas for a cure, and he found intense excitement in riding on a horse and things that got him really motivated to do more. And this alleviated the pain in his body for brief periods, and he began in getting interested in the mind's ability to affect the body. And he claims to have cured himself of consumption or tuberculosis by his methods. His method of dealing with tuberculosis, with changing his thoughts, ended up with planting the seed for the foundation of New Thought teaching. And he was quite a writer, too, I might add. If you have a Kindle, you can go online and get his collected works for $0. And I just downloaded that, and I'm looking forward to reading it. Now, Quimby himself was a watchmaker and a mechanic. I mean, what an amazing guy. He was totally practical, in addition to being a healer and a mystic. Now, as an example, he had an issue with one of his kidneys, and he began doing some experiments with mental healing. And he said, "Mind is matter in solution, and matter is mind in form." This was brought out in his practice with the use of the law, which probably has taught, his thoughts are probably taught in 90% of all New Thought churches today. Now, he was an influence on Mary Baker Eddy, who was the founder of Christian Science, although ultimately Christian Science deviates from Quimby's writings. And at the time, the teachings of the two were not necessarily universally accepted. Quimby was called an infidel, and Mrs. Eddy was declared to be a witch. Fortunately, today we don't even think that. So Quimby's influence was reflected in the writings of Warren Evans, who was a Methodist and later a Swedenborgian minister, which was a part of the Theosophical movement. And he published a number of works exploring Quimby's ideas, including mental cure, mental medicine, and soul and body. So I'm going to list a few other people that were pioneers in our movement. And you may have heard of some of them. There's Emma Curtis Hopkins, who wrote Lessons on Mysticism. She taught the Fillmores, who founded the Unity Church. She was the first great New Thought teacher. The others were writers, and the ones that came up with a lot of basic ideas. According to Holmes, she had a transcendent feeling that was palpable. In other words, her aura was pretty powerful. Emily Cody wrote Lessons in Truth, and two-thirds of the greatest early New Thought teachers studied with her. And Quimby's teachings were an influence on Norman Vincent Peale, who was a Protestant clergyman and is an author best known for popularizing the concept of positive thinking. So in 1916, the International New Thought Alliance, which had been formed a few years earlier, Carolyn can talk about that later if she'd like. Agreed upon a purpose which embraces some of the central ideas that unite all of us as New Thought practitioners. And I quote, "To teach the infinitude of the Supreme One, the divinity of man and his infinite possibilities through the creative power of constructive thinking and obedience to the voice of the indwelling presence, which is our source of inspiration, power, health, and prosperity." So eventually, the major groups that we know of today within New Thought emerged, and they've continued to evolve. As we know that the we're not necessarily Religious Science, but the Centers for Spiritual Living now, and that was an evolution. And these groups include the Unity, Divine Science, Religious Science, and the Church of Truth, which I've never really heard of, but anyhow, all stemmed from the teachings of Quimby, and he was, for us, the greatest mystic of modern times. So thinking back on that, and believe me, I thought a lot about all of this, and but thinking about how you started out with a few seeds and it just grew and grew, and people grabbed the thoughts and moved on, and there were great thinkers and writers. And so you can see that those thoughts have created the seeds for centuries and to form the group of New Thought churches that we see today. And all of us, in our own way, are part of that history since we partake in these teachings, and therefore we're part of its future. And to me, that's really exciting. And I love history. I love studying history. So for me, this is real joy to read about the history of New Thought, because I realized that there were no accidents. It was so, it's riveting to read about this. And I encourage you, if you have access to that book, to be able to read that, or perhaps go online. And I believe that the Encyclopedia Britannica has an article online on the history of New Thought. And it'll stir new thoughts of what might be possible.